right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a very humid 75 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. Feels like it is midsummer again. And I think all this week we're going to be pretty toasty. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show CRISPRing Mosquitoes, Humans, Woolly Mammoths, and Dinner. Yes, we spent an entire show looking at the various ways CRISPR is being utilized in our environment. It has been democratized, and it is going to be probably one of the most disruptive technologies we have ever seen here on planet Earth, being able to splice and dice the building blocks of life in their own image. And how interesting is that? I mean, we've seen all kinds of crazy things between being able to CRISPR people, mosquitoes, viruses, bacteria, humans, did we say that already? Cows, I don't know, dinner, lettuce, tomato, pickles, who knows? Actually, potatoes, apples, and mushrooms. We also discovered that by CRISPRing, they get around any rules or regulations for having to label that, because it is not technically considered, by their definition, of genetically engineered, because it doesn't have recombinant cells from other organisms in it. It's just editing the cell of the organism itself. But the problem with that is they have been able to now take these abilities of very precisely mixing and matching traits from different species. Remember, DARPA's been sprinkled in the middle of this, and this has all been a spin-out of the original biowarfare med science program. I just saw something today, and we had talked about this, I would have to say, maybe even 2 years ago. It was a video. RT News put it out. I've played the clip a whole bunch of times, and it was about creating two new synthetic proteins or amino acids, whatever you want to call them, to add two additional letters to the DNA strand. They had originally talked about it, of course, being able to create alien life. I think that was even one of the titles of the clip. But, I mean, alien in the fact that there is nothing on this planet that doesn't have, with DNA, I should say, that doesn't have A, T, C, and G. But they're talking about adding an exponential dimension now to life. And, of course, they were going to do it all in the name of creating new materials and new drugs to be able to cure you. And we have this mad science gone mad that is completely and beyond off the rails and careening down a cliff. And you hear the squealing noises. Woo. I mean, we right now are at this cusp of everything getting broken in a very bad way. And, you know, you had to scratch your head way back when they were building the seed vaults and making Noah's Arks for things. But you kind of get it now. Anyway, let's read the story. So if this doesn't put the writing on the wall, I don't know what does. Startups artificial DNA could revolutionize drug design. Of course, it is all in the name of keeping you safe. I'm going to see if I can find that alien DNA video. Hold on. X and Y. Company pursues breakthrough medicines with proteins unlike any that are seen in nature. Four letters of DNA write the universal code shared by all of life, or at least they used to. I mean, what a horrible statement that is. This is an MIT Technology Review. The story was published yesterday, September 6, 2016. I mean, we've been so right on the money. Guys, this is like the Tempest out of the bottle, not just a genie. It's lots of them. and we are being genieized. Synthorix, S-Y-N-T-H-O-R-X, a bio startup in La Jolla, California, is designing microbes with an expanded genetic alphabet containing six letters, adding the synthetic X and Y to the natural A, T, C, and G. Now, who, of course, has been working on the synthetic genome? Oh, but good old Georgie Church and all of our buddies down at that Broad Institute and the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering, institutions tied to Harvard and MIT. I mean, guys, this is such an ugly picture. We have DARPA that now has that little board with all the tech people and the Broad Institute guy. We have DARPA working on shape-shifting vaccines and being able to create synthetic immune systems. Oh, wait until you see. I have come across a few DARPA things. You want to talk about like going down the road of shape-shifting? Wow, there's some big problems coming down the line, because it is going to be sci-fi world if these ever come to fruition. Anyway, back to this X and Y. These bacteria, these brand spanking new ones never before seen outside of the laboratory that now include ATCG, X, and Y, have no counterparts in nature. And Synthorix is using them to design novel proteins that hold promise as the basis for future painkillers, oh goody, antibiotics, and cancer-targeting compounds. The company is based on the work of one of its founders, chemist Floyd Romsberg, at the Scripps Research Institute. You know, Scripps, we got to dig into one day, but they seem to be coming up a lot in the annals of synthetic biology. For over 15 years, Romsberg tinkered away perfecting a pair of artificial DNA letters that would work congruently with the genetic machinery of life, but not be so similar as to get mixed up with the existing letters. In 2012, oh, right around the time CRISPR hit the stage, Romsberg Labs published the creation of X and Y, and in 2014, yeah, I see, I told you, about 2 years ago we actually talked about this, he showed that bacterial cells could replicate and propagate genes containing X and Y, and here comes people, into future generations. Now that is that ethical slope that I thought was drawn in the sand as far as what research was quote unquote being allowed and what wasn't, was that any modifications made to the human genome that could be passed down to future generations were not, and at least in the United States, but I think like there was some head nod agreement, but like I've said before, down scary dark hallways with blood splattered doors, so you never know what's going on. But at least officially, I thought that research, maybe this was only federally funded, but at least research that was being done in some capacity on the human genome had to be research that wasn't allowed to pass to future generations. Hence the embryo editing with CRISPR. Here and in the UK, as well as in China, I thought there was an agreement that those embryos had to be destroyed after a certain number of days and could not be allowed to grow to full term. Anyway, back to the story. So the big deal is that these are replicating artificial synthetic genomes we had read about. And I'm not going to be able to remember his name right now. It's on the tip of my tongue. Cupitel, for anyone in chat, if you remember, this guy who created Ventnor, Craig Ventnor. The JVC Fund, I believe, is what we discovered the other day, was the first lab to create a replicating synthetic know if it was a cell or a bacteria. He created something, but it was like the beginning of the synthetic biology revolution. People always thought there was some complexity, or that it would be very difficult to imitate life, Romsberg says. And it really suggests that the molecules of life are not privileged in any sort of special way, unquote. Now, one second here, Mr. Romberg. Life is sacred. The secrets of life and the beauty that intertwines this web of life, this ecosystem, where we all live together as clockwork, we used to, on this multi-tiered living organism we call Earth. I truly believe, from everything we've studied, from solar systems and the way things are birthed and destroyed and propagate and intermingle in space, to the very opposite ends of the spectrum at a nano level, and looking at the physics behind and the chemical composition behind and the sciences and maths behind this orchestration of everything that we know as existence is very beautiful. And he's now saying that life is not privileged in any sort of way. And as a matter of fact, we thought it would be very difficult, but it's not. Now, how frightening should that be? I need to learn more about this Romsberg. First time we've run across him. 2 years ago, no one had used X and Y to do anything useful, but Romsberg's goal was to create drugs. Ding. Too complex. Using conventional chemistry. He says, I can't do that in my lab. So starting a company solely focused on that is a way to get that done. And then along came Synthorix. The creation of X and Y is a scientific landmark itself. And Synthorix's true advance lies in the utilization of these letters to make new proteins. Simply adding the DNA letters X and Y hypothetically allows cells to make proteins with up to 172 different amino acids compared to nature's little puny set of 20. Now, what this reminds me of, and what's strange, you know, as we're doing more and more of this biological, technological merging of man and machine, of nature and constructed nature, I keep finding parallels to things that I've understood from the technical realm. One was that synthetic immune system, along with this new artificially intelligent immune system for the internet that they are working on, and for the entire internet of things. But another thing I'm seeing here is now, by adding two additional proteins to the building blocks of life, they've been able to expand the number of permutations and combinations that can occur to create an exponential growth in abilities. And where we saw this in technology was back, I would have to say, 10, maybe 15 years ago. Every router in the backbone of the internet just about was running on something that was called IPv4. IPv4 was the IP numbering scheme to be able to identify devices on the outside world of the internet. Typically, you'd see, I mean, any standard IP address, like 192.68.7.2, that's an internal address, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, an address, an IP address. The outside numbers are like phone numbers, so you can only have one location at a time that is tied to one address. Now, you could have a router, like most places do, and behind that router, you could have 10 million different computers running on the inside of the network. But on the outside, there were only a certain number of permutations and combinations that you could make with those four stanzas of numbers. Well, then came IPv6, and that was really, when I was still doing engineering, that was really a big push, was to get everyone to upgrade, get the routers moving to the new IPv6, because, oh my God, the internet is going to run out of numbers. And they pushed it, and they've gotten it ratified, and everything is out there now. I think if there was a certain drop-dead date at one point for being IPv6 compliant. So I was just reading a story the other day about the difference between the Internet of Things and the Internet of Everything. And we've talked about that also. It's the I, little O, capital T, versus the I, little O, capital E. The Internet of Everything was something also that we started selling back in like 2004, I would have to say, maybe 06. But it was Cisco's tagline to connect the world of smart. That's what it was all about. And I just saw in this story recently comparing the two that they had referenced not only Cisco, and there was a Cisco executive that was being interviewed for part of the article. So I was right on that. But the one thing they were discussing is how Internet, IPv6, enabled the Internet of Everything. I mean, guys, do you know how horrible I feel when I start looking at the stuff and I start finding things that we had done and things that we had really kind of pioneered in the very beginnings of exploring this new world of connectivity? I mean, we laid all the groundwork. If you ever wanted to know one of my big motivations for doing what I am doing now and why I dig so deep into things is because they tricked me. They tricked all of us. They had us help them build this insanity that's unfolding now. This is the long-term future. And I mean, 06 was only 10 years ago. In one small little decade, we have gone from IPv4, the old world, to IPv6, the world of insanity that's connecting us to a cellular and a DNA level to the machine. Anyway, back to the story. That was a little sideline tidbit for the next time you're playing some sort of trivia game. The creation of X and Y is a scientific landmark in and of itself, and yet Synthorax's true advance lies in the utilization of these letters to make new proteins. Simply adding DNA letters X and Y hypothetically allows cells to make proteins with up to 172 different amino acids compared to nature's set of 20. A lot of these amino acids are pretty redundant, says Romsberg. And to a medicinal chemist who spends their careers making drugs, that must look extremely limiting. Yes, the puny humans. The synthetic amino acids, on the other hand, scientists could make an existing protein bind to its target more strongly, resulting in a more effective drug. And another idea is to engineer a protein to bind to one specific target while avoiding targets very similar in hopes of eliminating dangerous side effects. One such project at Synthorax aims to turn spider venom, yes, people, spider venom, arachnid cells, into a non-opioid, non-addictive painkiller. Novel antibodies and drugs for metabolic disorders are also on the agenda. Insulin would be a great target, Synthorax CEO Court Turner said. It is already produced in E. coli. Man, E. coli is like the workhorse bacteria for all this mad craziness, it seems. It's already produced in E. coli, but it has to be injected on a daily basis. Incorporating the right synthetic amino acids into insulin molecules could make a long-lasting version, so the diabetics only need to inject it every few days or once a week. There seems to be no doubt among scientists that if this technology works, it will be revolutionary. Guys, how many of these things do we have to read? Never before seen. First time in the lab. First time ever creating some sort of biological processes that is programmable by a flesh and blood and able to bag, tag, splice, dice in real time. Living organisms, guys. I mean, this really, as we dig more and more into this and discover how dependent we are upon bacteria and all these different bacterial ecosystems that don't only exist on our body. And I believe, didn't we find we had 5 different ones between our oral and skin and stomach and other body parts? We have 5 different cultures that compete and try to live in harmony on our bodies. And then we look at the soils, and we look at all the damage that's being done to the soils. We look at companies like Synlogix that have Bill and Melinda Gates money spinning out of MIT to be able to modify gut bacteria to be therapeutic. We also find out that glyphosate is a potent antibiotic and does lots of damage to the gut microbiota. It also damages the microbiota of cattle and other creatures that we consume that begins with their feed that they are fed that is treated with glyphosate and other gut bacteria killing products like antibiotics. You know, if you remember, Obama had signed an executive order. I mentioned this a bunch of times before, but I actually found it for the notes of that show, mentioned again a few days back, from September 18, 2014. And man, the man must be psychic. Executive order combating antibiotic-resistant bacteria by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America, I hereby order as follows. Section 1 policy, the discovery of antibiotics in the early 20th century fundamentally transformed human and veterinary medicine. And antibiotics have saved millions of lives each year in the United States. But the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria, however, represents a serious threat to the public health and the economy. Well, thank goodness, because they just took care of that economy. 21st century, man science gone man medicine, creating drugs with synthetic bacteria, as well as adding new proteins to the DNA strands to give you 172 amino acids to tinker with now, is sure going to fuel that biotech economy, that religion of science that seems to be taking over for any type of backing up the truck or slowing down to look at the consequences of what we're doing. The Center for Disease Control, an organization we put a lot of trust in, and the Department of Health and Human Services estimates annually that at least 2 million illnesses and 23,000 deaths are caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria in the United States alone. And of course, they blame it all on overprescription of antibiotics. But we just read 3 or 4 stories a few days back looking at the superbugs in the different waterways, including our drinking water in the sewage plants. They were blaming the utilization of chlorine into the sewer systems as birthing superbugs. We've also read about glyphosate, like I said, being a potent antibiotic. Dr. Huber talked extensively about that, killing the good soil bacteria and allowing an opening again for bad bacterias to raise their ugly heads and not have any types of checks and balances. There's a story out of a local, I don't know, I think this is a California paper, it's Pollution Online, I don't know, maybe. For the first time ever, superbugs found in our drinking water as well. I think this was in France. I think that's where we found that. It was in France. But it was the first time ever, never before seen. Yes, it was in France. And now we got to find new ways to sterilize things. Well, don't worry about it, because I am sure the UN will come up with something. Yes, the pesky freaking UN is getting ready. Super bug explosion. Holy shit. Triggers UN General Assembly meeting. This came out today. Antibiotic resistance has grown so dire that it will be the subject of a dedicated global summit later this month. This is the rise of the superbug takeover. Several times a week, Brad Spelling struggles with a difficult decision. A patient stumbles into his emergency room in Southern California, suffering from familiar symptoms. Pressure when she urinates, pain in her side, fever, and nausea. Based on these clues, Spellberg can quickly diagnose the problem as a kidney infection. But the trouble lies in deciding what he should do next. He knows that this patient is hurting, and of course he wants to help, but what's more than his patient's health hangs in the balance. Like an emergency room clinician, Spellberg has two desperate options. The first is to treat the patient with a powerful antibiotic called carbapenem, K-A-R-B-A-P-E-N-E-M, which is administered intravenously. It would wipe out a variety of bacteria that are causing the infection, but there is a catch. Deploying this precious resource may make it less likely he can use it to treat a future patient. The drug would kill susceptible bacteria, but it would also fuel resistance by allowing a few microbes who are able to survive carbapenem and thrive and multiply. Spellberg's second option is to send the patient home with a lower level class drug, a quinolone. And ding, ding, quinolones are that series of drug that actually have lawsuits against the company because they cause all that tendon problem, or it causes the neuropathy as a side effect. So be careful with those. The stake of his decisions are high, and if a relatively mild bacterium is behind the patient's infection, a quinolone would neutralize it and the patient would recover. But if the infection is caused by a drug-resistant pathogen, the patient would not recover without carbapenem, and the untreated infection may worsen. I would probably give her like mega doses of cranberry juice and maybe see if I could get a silver solution somehow. Maybe drink some silver and get it to pass out through the kidneys, if it can. That would probably be my first try. Spellberg's Catch-22 comes down to an issue of timing. I'd probably do some vitamin D as well, boost that immune system. He would not know exactly what the bug is causing the patient's infection for several days because there is no fast diagnostic cheap test available yet. DARPA was working on those as well. Remember, those microsensors are going to be everywhere. And so it will take 3 days for lab workers to identify the patient's assailant. Spellberg cannot wait that long to make his choice, and his dilemma, sadly, is not uncommon. Across the country, that was very long-winded now, wasn't it? Across the country, doctors are struggling with the same issue. Ho-ho, problem, reaction, solution. It was a nice setup there, guys. As he faces the chief medical officer at Los Angeles County and the University of Southern California Medical Center. Such situations now represent a key front against encroaching antibiotic resistance. And there is alarming evidence that we are quickly losing ground. In August, for example, the World Health Organization issued new guidance on sexually transmitted diseases. Yeah, like Zika. Zika is available in tears now, too, just like Ebola. Remember Ebola, they discovered it hid in the eyeballs and in the sex organs. There was a story that came out the other day. It now is reported that Ebola lives in semen for not 90, not 30, not 90, not 120, not 365 days like they had been reporting, continuing to report and updating during the quote-unquote Ebola crisis. But it now is reported to live 565 days in sperm, and it can hide secret and dormant. We had a few different relapses in cases since that time, and it is being spread very stealthily. Well, the Zika virus now seems to be very similar in that they couldn't figure out how all these mystery transmissions were happening. Well, now not only is Zika a sexually transmitted disease, but apparently it lives in tears as well, and very possibly might be able to be passed to someone else. But don't worry about that. This new superhuman disease that's just come out of nowhere and become so virulent that we have $1 billion trying to get passed in funding, which I saw they did an emergency Congress recall to try and vote on that Zika funding, and they didn't get it through again. So I don't know. I think it's a good sign. Anyway, in August, for example, they put out the WHO put out new guidance on sexually transmitted diseases and said that the standard drugs used to treat gonorrhea are often no longer effective due to escalating resistance. Well, now the World Health Organization recommends employing two drugs against the bacterium that causes the infection. Moreover, earlier WHO analysis concluded that antibiotic-resistant pathogens are now present in every part of the world, jeopardizing a whole century of medical advances. Well, don't worry about it, because now step right up. Here comes synthetic biology to save the day. A threat of antibiotic resistance has become so dire that the United Nations General Assembly is holding a meeting to discuss it this month in New York City. And although the World Health Organization has been sounding the alarm on antibiotic resistance for years, this month's high-level UN meeting represents only the fourth time in an international body's history that its General Assembly, which is a global deliberative body that primarily grapples with issues like war and economies, has held a meeting to tackle a health topic. The other three meetings were, HIV, non-communicable diseases, and Ebola. Ding, ding, ding. It means agenda. This meeting is, quote, a clear recognition that this is a worldwide threat. Yes, but we can save you, wink, to everyone. And that worldwide action is what we need to address it, says fittingly named Ezekiel Emanuel, chair of medical ethics, ding, and health policy at where? Oh, the University of Pennsylvania. Now, is that sentence not like a triple oxymoron head F? His name is Ezekiel, and he's the chair of what medical ethics? In health policies at where? Oh, the University of Pennsylvania, where they are planning on CRISPRing the first humans. Yeah, okay. Oh, my goodness. The pressure to hold such a high-level meeting, what are the chances of that? The pressure to hold such a high-level meeting has grown in recent years, even as a necessary and incorrect, it's all your fault, antibiotic use in healthcare and agriculture has exacerbated the problem. For example, when agriculture producers treat their healthy stock, their fish, or their livestock with antibiotics to help speed their growth and help them be healthy in super subpar conditions, they are simultaneously fueling resistance that could sideline the drugs for human use. The September 21st, right there on the fall autumnal solstice, the UN meeting will come on the heels of some particularly bad news about superbugs. Of course it was. Last November, an analysis published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases reported that scientists had detected resistance to the last line of antibiotics called colistin, colistin, in meat animals, and that people in China, likely from use of colistin in livestock to speed agricultural production. Well, don't worry about that, because Chinese beef and human clone factories are going to fix that. We've read that story a couple times, and that is exactly what they are planning to do, is clone meat, so they don't have to worry about messy farms or anything like that. The resistant gene was found on a plasmid, a length of DNA that can be easily transferred between different strains of bacteria. Then, more bad news. In recent months, we have seen the spread of this colistin resistance gene emerging rapidly, I say, in various areas around the globe. Colistin resistant E. coli, ding, 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 has surfaced in more than 30 countries, including in a patient in the U.S. And one strain of this E. coli in the U.S. is actually proven resistant to both carbapenem and colistin. But fortunately, that strain appears to be susceptible to some other antibiotics still. The fact that we are so concerned about colistin resistance is a sign of how desperate we are. Remember, we read that story about resistant consumers and how when the situation changes, remember, when it's not in my backyard, it doesn't affect you. But once it's in your backyard and they put the fear of God into you, people will open their arms to new technologies that might be the saving golden key. And I think that that is exactly what is going on here. What are the chances that, again, we are tinkering with E. coli unfettered democratically across the globe everywhere? And we now have a strain of E. coli that's shown up in more than 30 countries that's resistant to the last two lines of defense that we ever had after all the billions of dollars of research. But hey, don't worry about it. We have all this new synthetic DNA medicine that's coming to a lab near you that'll be able to cure you. And if not, hey, last resort, we got synthetic shape-shifting immune systems that'll be able to modify you as part of a gene therapy program that we're going to implement, all in the name of keeping you safe, to be able to self-adapt itself just like an antivirus with artificial intelligence and keep you safe from any pathogen, current, past, future, or imagined. All you got to do is step right up and you will be cured, guys. We are being put in a position where they are going to make the apocalypse. And I'm talking figuratively, but also literally. And we read a story about all of a sudden the head of one of the big agencies, I don't remember, one of the alphabet upper echelons came out and had some words for the Senate Arms Committee about gene editing now being a weapon of mass destruction and how this democratization across the globe has fueled a microscopic arms race that we aren't necessarily prepared to fight. That just one little Typhoid Mary, one little breach in protocol in a lab, and in our research we discovered there aren't really any protocols. There isn't really anybody watching the store. And holy shit, we moved Plum Island, the biological research facility for warfare that focused on agriculture, animals, and pathogens, and entomological warfare with pathogens being put into insects as well as attacking crops and livestock to wage warfare on other countries. They moved that facility from an offshore island of New York City called Plum to a facility housed at the University of Kansas right now, but soon to be in a new multi-million, I don't know, this is a pretty huge facility, square foot facility, right in the heart of Tornado Alley in Manhattan, Kansas. And they're playing with some of the most dangerous pathogens that exist on the planet, mixing and matching them. We read about just a few that we know about. There's lots more going on that we don't. But don't worry about it, because we now have this super bacteria that's coming. And the UN is going to help us find a solution. All right, let's continue on. Never before seen. Remember, I told you, raising an eyebrow. So just know the UN's getting involved. They're getting ready to clamp down. There's going to be forced. You know, there's a lot of conversation about forced vaccination. There was a story I saw yesterday, if I can get out there really quick, about whether or not quarantines and vaccinations, prophylaxis, could be forced upon people who will be considered contagious or infected in the event of some sort of outbreak. And we covered that. I wrote a story on Antimedia about it last year, the year before, when you had that infected nurse that got quarantined in New Jersey after coming back from Africa. I think she might have had some direct contact. Carrie something was her name. And they put her in a tent outside the hospital. And she was crying, oh, my, you know, civil rights. And she got herself an attorney, and she was fighting it. She didn't want to stay in quarantine. She was going to go out and ride a bike. And, you know, that really brought up an ethical conundrum. I try not to jump into a situation with a preconceived decision. I like to try to understand all the different facets from different shoes and then try to make a determination as to which makes more logical sense. You know, you look at it as one puzzle piece of a larger pie, and where your one decision might lead to one outcome, the other decision might lead to something else. You really got to weigh those in the grand scheme of things. And so my feelings in the end about quarantines and people coming back from infected areas especially were conflicted, just like anybody's would be. I mean, on the one hand, I could see being that Carrie, what's her name, coming back, and she had just been over trying to help people in this quote-unquote Ebola outbreak, whether or not it was orchestrated. Remember, we even sent the military to go combat Ebola, and they got the first experimental phase one vaccines to go over there. But when they brought Carrie back, what's his name? The big bloviator out of New Jersey, Chris Christie? No, yeah, Chris Christie, that's his name. Chris Christie quarantined that Carrie and said, look, you just came back. We need to make sure we incubate you since you were exposed directly to a pathogen before we let you go mingle with the general populace. She had a temper tantrum. And I got to tell you guys, just reading all these different stories about the lack of biosecurity in this country, I almost agree in some respect with the fact that if you're overseas in a country that you full know well, and especially if you work in a medical industry where you are going to be exposed to pathogens, you should have some respect for the rest of the population to not, intentionally or unintentionally, but if nothing else, selfishly endanger the population for your decisions. And I'm not saying her decision was a good or bad decision to go over to Africa to help in a crisis. It wasn't. I mean, it probably was a very life-changing experience. But you cannot be expected to come back to this country potentially carrying an infectious agent in you like a Typhoid Mary and be allowed to mingle when you are not certain whether or not you are contagious. Well, the bad news is that line of thinking could lead to very disturbing trends. This story came out on the 5th, 2 days ago. Apprehension, detainment, and vaccination for suspicion of infection. This is the CDC's new quarantine proposal. It's out of greenmed.info. You've had this dry cough for a couple of days, but are otherwise feeling ready for your much-awaited annual ski trip to Utah. On the security line, an officer signals for you to come to him, and not knowing why you're being selected out of the crowd, you follow to learn that you now meet criteria for a quarantine. Does this sound like science fiction? Well, what appears to be an unprecedented power grab, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention that exists within the Department of Health and Human Services has issued a proposed amendment to its domestic and foreign quarantine regulations, giving itself the power to legally apprehend, detain, being isolate or quarantine, and treat which does include vaccination, anyone simply for suspicion of being infected by a communicable agent. And if I'm not mistaken, there was an executive order again last year. Executive order. I think it was the quarantine one. And yes, I know, quarantine. I remember this because I think this was in my story. Executive order 13295. July 31st, 2014. So this was in my story. They revised the list of quarantinable communicable diseases. The revised list of quarantinable communicable diseases by the authority invested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America. Section 1, Amendment to Executive Order 13295. Based upon the recommendation of the Secretary of Health and Human Services in consultation with the Acting Surgeon General and for the purposes set forth in Section 1 of the Executive Order of 13295, April 4th of 2003, severe acute respiratory syndromes, which are diseases that are associated with fever and signs and symptoms of pneumonia or other respiratory illnesses, are capable of being transmitted from person to person, and that either are causing or have the potential to cause a holy shit, a pandemic, or upon infection, are highly likely to cause mortality or serious morbidity if not properly controlled. This subsection does not apply to influenza. So I was right, there was an executive order that came out looking at antibiotic resistance as well as, and I think this was right before the antibiotic resistant one, future communicable diseases that could be lethal if not treated. The legal authority to isolate and quarantine, according to the CDC's own words, are police power functions derived from the right of the state to take action affecting individuals for the benefit of society, quote unquote. Incidentally, the CDC police powers were not obtained democratically through the normal body up legislative process and final congressional approval, but through what? Oh, the bypass of that very executive order I just cited. The newly proposed CDC regulations are contained in the Federal Register dated August 15th, 2016, under the heading Control of Communicable Diseases Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. Whereas previous regulations concerning quarantinable infection focused on extraordinarily rare and presumably lethal forms of infection, i.e. novel forms of the N1H1 or the H1N1, the Ebola virus, these new regulations carry a much broader and ominously more nebulous definition. By terms, subsection A does not seek to limit the types of communicable diseases for which regulations may be enacted, but rather applies it to all communicable diseases that may impact human health. The CDC radically changed their definition of what constitutes an ill person by including a wide range of vague symptoms, such as ill appearance and a headache. I mean, that could be just because you're listening to the annoying person next to you in the airport. In lieu of objective signs now to be formally assessed by officials without medical training, such as a flight attendant or a transportation worker who can then report you. Moreover, being simply identified as having been at risk of recent exposure makes one classifiable as having a, quote, pre-communicable disease, which is pre-crime, except it's pre-disease, which can thereby result in one's apprehension and quarantine. The CDC defines pre-communicable disease to mean the stage at the beginning upon an individual's earliest opportunity for exposure to an infectious agent and ending upon the individual entering or re-entering the communicable stage of the disease, or if the individual does not enter the communicable stage, the latest date at which the individual could reasonably be expected to have the potential to enter into the communicable stage. So, guys, if you have been to the following, the trial of germ warfare efforts supported by the government and the media. Oh, if you've been following the trail, that's what it says, of germ warfare efforts supported by the government and the media. And yes, we have been very, very closely. You may see a crescendo mounting. These unprecedented efforts to apply more and more control are by themselves the sign of a failing paradigm. And upon this consensus, the collective, to hold the space for bold integrity, free will, and personal health beliefs. And we have an opportunity to do just that until October 14, 2016. The CDC's proposal right now, this Orwellian layer on this document, is open for comments. So I don't know if anyone has anything to say about it, but there is a link on the end of page 2, and I maybe will link directly to this as well, to where you can leave your comments on this ability for the CDC to quarantine you and potentially vaccinate you for something that they think you may potentially have. It's very frightening, people. So again, let's raise an eyebrow never before seen. I ran across one of these yesterday. A new genus of bacteria found living inside of hydraulic fracturing wells, more affectionately known as fracking wells. Yes, yes, yes. And remember, the Department of Energy is fully involved in fracking. So is Halliburton. Lots of other unsavory characters. Researchers analyzing the genomes of microorganisms living in shale oil and gas wells have found evidence of a sustainable ecosystem taking hold there, populated in part by a what? Oh, they say it exactly. Never before seen genus of bacteria that they have called Fracabatter. Fracabatter. Fracabacter. Fracabacter is what it is. This new genus is one of the 31 microbial members found inside two separate fracturing wells, Ohio State University researchers and their colleagues reported September 5th in the online edition of the journal Nature Microbiology. And even though these wells were hundreds of miles apart and drilled in different shale formations, the microbial communities inside them were nearly identical. Well, how the hell would that happen? Almost all these microbes have been found elsewhere before, and many likely came from surface ponds that energy companies, ding, 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 energy companies that have been working on synthetic biology, drawn on to fill the wells. But that is not the case with this newly identified Candidatus Fracabacter, which may be unique to hydraulic fracturing sites, says Kelly Winton, assistant professor of microbiology and biophysics at Ohio State. In biological nomenclature, Candidatus indicates it is a new organism that is being studied for the very first time using a genomic approach, not an isolated organism in a lab culture. And the researchers chose to name the genus Fracabacter as a play on words for fracking, shorthand for hydraulic fracturing. And I have to say, that's a pretty good name. Candidatus Fracabacter prospered alongside the microbes that came from the surface, forming communities in both wells, which have lasted nearly for a year. We think that these microbes in each well form a self-sustaining ecosystem where they provide their own food sources, and drilling the well and pumping in the fracturing fluid creates this ecosystem, but the microbes adapted to their new environment in a way to sustain their system over long periods of time. Well, how amazing is that? Wouldn't a bacteria such as that be really, really beneficial in a place that they are looking to terraform, like, oh, I don't know, Mars? This would be something that would create their own ecosystem to be able to produce their own food in an environment that wasn't necessarily premium for life. Very interesting. Pay attention to this. By sampling fluids taken from two wells over 328 days, the researchers restructured the genomes of bacteria and arachne living in the shale. And to the researchers' surprises, both shells well, sorry, one drilled in Utica and the other drilled in Marcellus, JJ, had nearly identical microbial communities. And in addition, these two wells are each owned by different energy companies that utilize different fracturing techniques. And the two types of shale exist more than a mile and a half below the ground, and they were formed millions of years apart and contain different forms of fossil fuel. You know, another thing that's interesting is that they are two different companies. And these two companies, remember, have a whole synthetic biology department that doesn't answer to anyone. And fracking fluid is kind of an industry secret for the energy company. They don't really share all of the deep ingredients that are within their fracking super slurry, because it would give away patented research. So I don't know, guys. I mean, again, never before seen. What do you believe? Well, I do believe that DARPA is spending billions on all kinds of different insanity. I think this is where we're going to kick it off tomorrow. We're going to look at those nanoparticles found in everybody's brain now. And when we left off yesterday, never got to today. And DARPA's shape-shifting programs that they have going on. There's quite a number of them. Here's a story out of 2015. It was pretty surprising because I must have missed this one. Programmable matter, shape-shifting microbots, get it all together. We found that a lot of these microbots are DNA microbots. It is already possible to get robots to swarm and to communicate. And that was all research done at that Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering. But it will be possible to take that next step and make bots that can metamorphize with or without intervention. Says right now, this is a scene from computer animation. And there we go. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. Lots of great radio tonight. And I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.